up and welcome back to 24 minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are moving to Graceland as we talk about Sofia Coppola's newest film, Priscilla.
When teenage Priscilla, how do you say her last name? I feel like I'm going to butcher it.
Beaulieu?
Beaulieu? They said it like two times in the movie and I didn't catch it either time. And I was just like, oh, it's just Priscilla Presley.
Priscilla B.
When teenage Priscilla B meets Elvis Presley, the man who is already a meteoric rock and roll superstar becomes someone entirely unexpected in private moments, a thrilling crush, an ally in loneliness, a vulnerable best friend. Just a note, this podcast was recorded and produced during the 2023 SAG-AFTRA strikes. Without the labor and the actors of the actors currently on strike, we would not have any of these movies to talk about here on the podcast. Luckily, A24 pays their actors, pays their writers, and exactly what they deserve, so we can talk about brand new movies like Priscilla, and that is a wonderful thing. We've got a brand new movie, Ben. I feel like it's been a minute, but also not. Like, I know we've been looking forward to this for a while.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk about this. It feels like it's been a while for me, I think, because I missed the Dicks the Musical episode.
Oh, you did, right? Yes,
and the last one was like in the summertime when we had our back to back Earth Mama and Medusa Deluxe. So it's been a while for me, but I'm very excited to talk about Priscilla.
Yeah, Priscilla is going to be great. Obviously directed by Sofia Coppola, highly touted essentially out of New York and out of several other film festivals. So we're going to talk about it in full. Comes out today, the same day that the podcast comes out. Mm-hmm. Both of us just saw it a couple of hours ago. If anybody from A24 is listening, we'd happily accept screeners so we can see these movies earlier and not record at midnight. Would be awesome. But in the case of us currently, we're just some average A24 Joes, and we just had to go see it at a movie theater and then commit to a late recording time. How are you holding up, Ben? Because it's later where you are than where I am.
I'm doing okay. I got a afternoon coffee to get me through because I knew what was going to be coming. Yep. It was funny because I happened to wear the shirt that you found for me, the A24 shirt. I wore
great
that tonight.
Shirt. Yeah.
And someone was like, oh, do you work for them? I was like, dude, I would not be here if I did. I'd be watching this movie at home. but it was a fun experience.
I similarly got a coffee. I got a double shot of espresso. Listeners of the podcast probably know by now, I'm at my most unhinged when I have a double shot late in the day. I went to a 4 p.m. showing, the first showing that I could find at my movie theater, me and like 25 other people, and nice. Had a double shot at 4, and it's 9:30 right now where I am, and I feel like it's starting to, I feel like it's really kicking it into second drive.
Okay.
So I'm totally prepped for this pod. I'm super ready. We do have some housekeeping to take care of quickly before we talk about Priscilla. Two things. The first one, we quickly wanted to talk about our Martin Scorsese draft.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's some open wounds, and I just kind of want to air. I kind of want to just air where we are. Where are we as friends, as podcast hosts, as Martin Scorsese lovers?
I mean, I feel like we're good. I think we're at a point now where we all have to band together, me, you, and Seth, you know, because the comments are coming after us. People are not happy that we left off Raging Bull and Wolf of Wall Street. But, you know,
hey,
every time I see
you.
That, I mean, I'm fine with it. That's not a problem. That's no big deal for me. But, you know, every time I see those comments, it's like, tell me you didn't listen to the episode without telling me you didn't listen to the episode.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you guys, it's not like we just made a top 11 each. You know, it's like we had to like compete to do this. So, you know, it is what it is. I honestly love the comments, though. Like, I think it's great. It's nice to see people's passion. It's also been good. There's some people who've been like, Silence is a masterpiece. And
we found our squad.
Too. So, yeah, it was good to see that some people appreciated that. But we knew that was coming. You could hear it in the episode if you listen to it. We knew that these comments were going to be here, and here they are.
Yeah, last week was a riot for sure. And I feel like both of us are to blame at different junctions here. Of course, you for not including The Wolf of Wall Street, and me for literally vetoing Raging Bull off the list, which I literally don't remember happening. I don't know if I blacked out during that moment of the podcast. Like, I do not. I remember going back through the pod and like scrubbing it and creating clips and all these things. And one of them is me like vetoing Raging Bull. And I texted you and I was like, I fucking did. I did that. I vetoed Raging Bull, and I'm the guy to blame for this masterpiece not making it on the list. And so I have to live with that. And
to be fair, you were vetoing it, I think, to move it up.
I was. And then I never brought it back.
Yeah. But then we realized what was happening. And then I think it was a Seth that played it. And then I was like, you guys, we're going to be leaving off Taxi Driver.
That
I was like,
oh,
my God, veto me, you know? So
I'm going to pin that one back on you. So you're to blame for both. And it is true what you said. Like, it's a collaborative ranking. It's a collaborative draft. So, like, we all only have so much of a say. This is not like an individual list where we've all just kind of like agreed, this is Scorsese's best 11. Like, we're fighting, and it's part of the game, which I think is ultimately the funnest part of the pod. So if you haven't listened to the episode yet, I highly suggest you go back and check it out. Last week's episode, this month on the podcast, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You would already know this and see the schedule, but we've got another big director that we're covering at the end of the month. Are you excited?
Dude, I can't wait. Like, this is one of my favorite directors of all time. I think it's going to be a super fun draft for sure.
It is going to be a blast. We're going to be doing a collaborative ranking of Steven Spielberg.
The man. The
man, the myth, the legend. Again, two legends, 2 months in a row. This time we've got two guests. So it's going to be our first four-person collaborative ranking, which means we're going 14 movies deep. I'm not ready for that. I'm just going to put that out there right now.
I mean, I pulled up, you know, his whole IMDb, and I started making the list of everything he's directed. I was like, I don't know how we're going to limit it to that. You know, the dude's got so many. I mean, it was the same with Scorsese.
Yep.
We saw what happened. So I'm curious to see what isn't going to make the cut with Spielberg.
I also just want to preemptively warn listeners, and I'm sure this information has been shared before on here. You've never seen any of the original Indiana Jones movies. And until you watch one, I will not stop publicly harassing you.
I mean, that's totally fine. I've seen Crystal Skull, so I have a favorite Indiana Jones movie. So that's all.
I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to save you. That's a bad take, Ben. You need to fix that.
Well, so you watch Purple Rain, I'll watch Indiana Jones. Okay.
Well, I don't know if that's an even trade. That doesn't seem even in my opinion. I will tell you, as a friendly competitor, there will be an Indiana Jones movie that I will be vying for potentially number one. I'm just going to put that out there. That's just a little tease. We record a week from now, so we're going to like kind of pre-record before the episode comes out.
Yeah.
You have a week to maybe sit on that information. Do with it what you will.
Sounds like I have a week to sit on my veto and just wait for it. So.
Just wait for that to happen.
Yeah.
I'm curious if vetoes are going to get a little more hectic with four people.
Well, it's funny because my thought process was always like, if I haven't seen it, I'm not going to veto it because I don't know. You know what I mean? Other than Grease, that's the exception. That's the exception to the rule. But then you and Sophie were just like, I've never seen Purple Rain. I'm vetoing it. It's like, that's not.
That's literally why a veto exists. That's the point.
It's going to be chaos.
It's going to be super fun. So yeah, stick around. Make sure you subscribe to the pod on YouTube or wherever you listen, and come back for that at the end of the month. The other A24 housekeeping is a real housekeeping thing. News reported that A24 is developing a TV series based on Jessa Hastings's Magnolia Park's books, which have been described as Gossip Girl set in high society London. Ben, do you know about these books, and have you ever seen Gossip Girl?
No, and like an episode of the reboot. So no, not really.
So, no.
But honestly, I'm excited about it regardless. I'm like, cool. Like I missed it when the first show was on. It just wasn't, you know, in my wheelhouse. But I'm excited about this. Like, let's check it out.
I have no idea what any of those words mean, except for set in high society London. And I'm totally there. I think that sounds great. So if I'm on board, I feel like that's a pretty good sign. Like, I feel like a big swath of people will probably be excited. A lot of people I follow on Twitter said this is a good thing. So A24 getting into more TV shows. We have The Curse coming out in a week, I believe. So, I mean, obviously, you know, A24, Euphoria and things like that.
Keep Sam Levinson away from this show and the
Whatever
weekend.
Whatever
you
do,
know?
Please.
Yeah, yeah.
And Irma Vep. I had a great time with Irma Vep. Remember that?
That was awesome.
That was a good time. Okay, that was our two A24 housekeepings. Now let's talk about Priscilla. I have a couple preemptive questions for you before we give our full thoughts on the movie. We will be talking about spoilers. This is, in fact, based on a book called Elvis and Me. So this is like, you know, public information, if you will. Yeah. So whatever you want to hear is totally up to you. If you want to see the movie first, great. Just save the pod and come back and listen to us after you've seen it. But we're going full spoilers on this one. I do want to know, I got a brand new Iron Claw trailer in front of Priscilla. Did you also get a new Iron Claw trailer?
I got an Iron Claw trailer, but I had seen it on YouTube like a week or so ago.
Oh, so maybe I missed it.
Maybe, I don't know. Or you got a different trailer than I did. Because you also got a trailer for All the Strangers or something like that,
right? I did, yes.
And I did not get a trailer for that. So we may have had a different trailer set.
Okay, so I think there's a very distinguishing element that I can try to figure out if you saw my trailer or not. Your trailer, or I guess the publicly released trailer that we initially talked about here on the pod and gave a review of, had two needle drops in it. Did yours have two needle drops? One is Don't Fear the Reaper, and one is something else. I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. It starts with like Zac Efron in the ring, like doing the running back and forth. That's the trailer I got tonight.
Okay, so we might have gotten the same trailer, because mine only had one needle drop, which I noticed was different from the first one I saw. And it also gave much more of the story away, I guess you could say, to someone like me, who is totally ambivalent to like what is going on with them.
Yeah.
I believe, does one of them die? Does one of the brothers pass away?
Yes.
Okay, great.
And that's not a spoiler. It's in the trailer, but yes. Yeah.
Okay, great. This is what I inferred from the trailer. I guess it was a new trailer to me. I really liked it, and I literally thought like, oh God, maybe this comes out and like this goes for some Oscar noms? Like, question mark?
I'm excited really to see. Good. Efron looks like he's holding his own, you know? I'm excited.
Yep. I'm very excited. Exciting stuff. Okay, general review of Priscilla, much anticipated. What did you think?
I had a good time with it. I thought I like Sofia Coppola. I like her directing style in the things that I've seen. I haven't seen all of her movies, but the stuff I have seen, I enjoy. And this kind of felt in line with that. You know, it didn't feel like there was like really sweeping highs or really low lows. Like it kind of felt, monotone isn't the right word, but like even keel, I guess, throughout. Like I never felt myself really torn as much as I was maybe anticipating. But I mean, there are definitely moments of like emotion and intensity in the film, but you know, just like the character, you know, Elvis just like quickly like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, just like right afterwards. So it just like everything gets calmed down. Nothing really lingers. It doesn't feel like there's any lingering emotion throughout the movie. But other than maybe just like sadness and isolation, you know, that was just like, that was the thing that kept growing throughout. It's just realizing how alone she really is, you know, which is, you know, I think it was conveyed really well. What is her name? Is it Kaylee
Spaney?
Yeah, she was awesome. She gave such a great performance. I think for what the role was, Jacob Elordi did a really good job. You know, he's on screen almost as much. He's there for pretty much the entire thing. Obviously, everyone, you know, who's listening to this knows how much I loved Elvis. So
that was my big question mark for you. Like, how does Jacob Elordi compare to Austin Butler? And then like how, seeing the other side of the Elvis story, like how do those things compare to each other?
I mean, I think he did a really good job. You know, it's funny, his little thing he's talked about with his Elvis accent he got from like Lilo and Stitch, you know, it's like that's only his experience with Elvis. And I think that's great. Whereas obviously Austin Butler went like beyond method.
Full Joker mode.
Yeah, he just like stayed in it even during the whole awards campaign, which was kind of a lot. But
it was sick though, honestly. Like, you gotta commend.
It was kind of cool. Yeah, this guy from like Southern California all of a sudden has this like Memphis accent like nonstop. But I thought Elordi did a really, really good job. He seemed to have the charm of Elvis. And I mean, he's a handsome dude, you know, we've all seen him.
Oh god, like, yeah, he is.
And their height difference is nuts. You know, I don't know how accurate that is in real life, but he's just a big fucking dude. Yeah. But yeah, he gives a really, really good performance for Kaylee to, you know, bounce off of. I think everyone does a really nice job in this movie, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the pacing of it. You know, sometimes it could run the risk of being too slow or whatever, but I think anytime that happened, it was definitely meant intentionally just to show of like, you know, it was whatever it was, the 60s. And it was just like, if you didn't have anything to do in a house, you just didn't have anything to do. You know, you couldn't just like get on your phone, or you couldn't, you know, whatever. It's just like, if there's nothing to do, there's nothing to do, you know, like, so that's kind of shown throughout here. And just his like, I need you at the house, like that kind of a thing. So she was just kind of a prisoner of Graceland, which was really an interesting aspect, because like you said, the Baz Luhrmann movie, we get to see what he's doing while she's stuck in the house. So we get like the montage of the guys on the bus and doing all this shit and, you know, having fun and, you know, doing whoever and doing whatever. So this was I think a really cool, juxtaposition to that movie, and just seeing the opposite side of it and how it affected other people.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, like, I just think it's an interesting social thing that, like, last year we got Elvis and this year we get Priscilla. Like, I think that's really cool. And I think it is definitely eye opening to like the glamorizing glorification of fame and how it can go both ways. I agree with you on basically everything that you said. I had a good time with Priscilla. I think if anything, I did feel like it was a little bit too even keeled. But I think without that nature, you lose a lot of the poignancy of the isolation that Priscilla does feel. Like, that is what she is feeling. So to that effect, I think Sofia Coppola does a really good job. You mentioned Kaylee Spaney, tremendous in this movie. Very, very, very good. Her facial expressions of like just despair and loneliness are really sad. It's got the Sofia Coppola like aesthetics to it. Has a really cool like Super 8 kind of like film montage going on. There's some really neat stuff, really good lighting, excellent costumes, excellent production design. Like, it just looked really good, which you know would expect from a Sofia Coppola movie. You mentioned Jacob Elordi's height, which I think is really an excellent like visual demonstration of Elvis's kind of commanding power over Priscilla in a physical embodiment, and like just how he oversaw everything about her, essentially. And we really do dive into that like caged nature of what her life does become, and like the alluring idea of falling in love with someone, but that someone is in love with being famous. So I think there's a lot of good things at play. I think the more that I think about it, the more that I like it. But I don't, it's not one of my favorite movies of the year. It's not like a top 10 for me for the year. I think it's just like a really good movie. And I think that's okay. Like, I think that is important to just have like really good movies that are not like superb, but are also not bad, because like we're living in an era of such high highs and such low lows. So this definitely falls on the right side of the spectrum for me.
It's not like, for me, it's not Haunted Mansion where I wish I just waited for streaming. Like, I'm glad I saw this in the theater. Like, I think it still played well and it was like worth the money to me, but I'm with you. Like, I don't know, this isn't making my top 10 of the year, but I'm glad that I saw it in theaters.
Yeah. I think it's definitely worth seeing in theaters, obviously supporting Sofia Coppola, supporting cinemas, your local cinema, especially hopefully. So I think there's a lot of positives. And like I said, like the more that I think about it, the more I dissect it, the more I analyze maybe the kind of like toxic relationship on display between Elvis and Priscilla, the more that I do enjoy, the more that I find these nuances and intricacies that are really thought out and really well done. Yeah. One thing I wanted to call to mind before we go through the movie, before we do true cinema, Elvis's boys. I think this is a very important aspect to the film. He is never not without his guys. He's got his group that are with him, and they are with him all the time, everywhere, even to the point where as soon as he learns that Priscilla is pregnant, he turns around and tells the guys who are right there. What did you think of that? What did you make of that? Like, the energy that they bring and that like kind of dissection of Elvis's commandeering nature of just everybody around him, and like how that plays out.
Yeah, I think, you know, it plays into his charismatic side. I think there's also, not that they explored it a bunch, but there's the potential that some of these people are just kind of the yes men, and just like, you know, I'll do whatever Elvis wants me to do because he's, you know, funding my lifestyle. Basically, he's letting me live in Graceland and do all this kind of shit. But Priscilla kind of pushes back on some things, and that's not what he wants in a relationship. And so that's where I think these guys are just like, they're the ones that'll be like, oh yeah, no, it's a great idea or whatever. You know, like he can get what he needs in that sense from these guys of like, they will always agree or they'll always do whatever. They're not going to push back and tell me that my song maybe isn't great.
Yeah.
You know, they're just going to be like, yeah, no, man, that's cool. That's awesome. Like whatever.
I mean, I think a really good example of that, and not something that I had on the True Cinema shortlist, so I don't think I'm really jumping the gun on anything here, but there is a moment where they're like at a pool party and Elvis is like, what the hell is a Beatle? Like, don't play that at my pool party. Mm-hmm. And his friend is just like, yeah, you got that right, man. Like, why would I play that? And it's like, come on, guys, you know the Beatles. Like, you know how, what this means. So yeah. I mean, it's a really like, again, I mentioned like the nuance, like I think something like that can be totally viewed as like a throwaway, but is a really good demonstration of that dissection and representation of Elvis and the relationships that he does keep. Yeah. Apparently there were some rights issues getting Elvis music for this film. So there are no Elvis tracks. How did that work in your opinion? Did you like the no Elvis music?
I did. I think she did a great job working around that. Like, I'm curious when this was written originally, what some of the needle drops were in there, because I can imagine they probably wanted some Elvis stuff, you know, she's like, my favorite song is Heartbreak Hotel, like whatever, like they probably would have tried to fit that in. But I think this worked really well with the soundtrack of even like some modern stuff that was well after the 60s. That's one thing that I think Sofia Coppola does really well. Like we see in Marie Antoinette, like it's like, it can be modern music set in a period piece. And not everything was modern. A lot of it was like time appropriate. And I think there's one that was, I wondered if it was, you know, like the Fair Use, because it was a song of his from a special, like we got one Elvis song in there.
Yeah, right.
That maybe, yeah, it's just like a Fair Use, like commons, Creative Commons kind of song. But yeah, I think she did a great job working around it.
It struck me as a very important creative decision to accent really Priscilla's perspective of life and of the relationship and everything, because I think we mentioned, like, you know, what does she do at Graceland when Elvis is away filming movies or when he's in Vegas at concerts? Like, she probably doesn't listen to his music. Like, she probably doesn't, like, view his specials, right? Like, she just has her own very isolated life. And I think that plays into that nature. There is like one of the very first needle drops of the movie is Crimson and Clover, which I thought was a really good needle drop. One of the last ones is, I believe, a Dolly Parton song. And
I Will Always Love You. Yeah.
Again, a great needle drop. So I think the use of music is an important narrative decision in like juxtaposing the total worldwide global phenomenon that Elvis was and how Priscilla might not have been encapsulated in that, like that idea and that world because she was so close to him.
For sure. And just to be clear, when you're not home, you make Molly listen to your podcast, right? Like she has to listen to it at home.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is all you can listen to is on a podcast. Okay.
if I'm in the office and our kids are at school, I'm like, listen, you're sitting here, you are watching this episode until I get home on repeat.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear. Yeah.
I need the views. Help me, please.
Yeah. We need the views. Come on.
Yes. If there's anything about me that everybody should know, it's that I view myself next to Elvis, which is essentially next to godliness. So
yeah, just a jukebox with all of our episodes in there. It's like, what do you want to listen to? You want to go back to Midsommar? We can listen to that.
Yeah.
One.
What do you got? What do you got on the track today? Okay. Any other callouts? Any other big sweeping ideas, thoughts, things you want to say before we start to break this down?
No. I mean, I think I've kind of covered everything I wanted to say. I'm glad that I saw it. It's a great addition to Sofia Coppola's resume. Mm-hmm. You know, and her filmography. I think she's shown to be a really good director, and this is just something that supports that.
Yeah, totally. I like it. I think it's really, really a movie you should see in theaters. And I think it is important to Sofia Coppola, to the story of Elvis to, you know, Priscilla to the 824 catalog. Like, I think there's a lot of great things about this movie. Okay, let's do our True Cinema. Let's start breaking this down and kind of talking our way through the movie here. First time meeting Elvis. We're really introduced to Priscilla over in Germany when Elvis is supporting the war and when he's drafted. She is basically invited by one of Elvis's friends to go to a party of his because he likes having people from home, like from back home, to talk to. And this all happens like kind of in this dream state montage style that Sofia Coppola really enacts like quite heavily in this movie, which I liked. I thought it worked well for this kind of like dazed malaise that Priscilla is in, moving through time and through the relationship. But she eventually goes to his party and sees him. And I will just say, I know this movie's called Priscilla, but the first time that I see Jacob Elordi as Elvis, I was like, oh shit, that's wow. We got it. Like that, that is excellent casting. It looks great. This is good.
Yeah. The charm just like oozes off that shot. It's like, oh yeah, this guy holds court at any party for sure. One thing I did enjoy about this is that they didn't shy away like from her age. They didn't try to sugarcoat it, you know, like they address the weirdness of the fact that she was like 14 or 15 when they first met, and just how kind of strange that is, like whatever, it's a different time. But I think that's one thing that needed to be addressed, and I'm glad that they brought that up in the movie, just to let it be known how strange even her family thought it was.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's important that they didn't stray away. I personally thought sometimes it was a little heavy-handed. It was like, cool, like I understood the first time. Like I got it that like this is weird and she's 14. And I think most people know that, unless you're, you know, not very privy to like the history of Elvis. But I think there were definitely times where it was like, okay, I know. Like I got it. I personally embedded that already like into the full understanding of Priscilla. So I didn't need it said a lot of times, but I am glad like that Sofia Coppola did not shy away from that and use that as a very important narrative device. The Vegas montage. So we've started to fall in love with Elvis. We've started to kind of go to Graceland occasionally. We've really kind of kicked off this relationship here. And, the first kind of montage I wanted to put on here was the Vegas montage, A, because it's in Vegas and it's Elvis. Get a great one-er tracking shot walking into the gambling floor, which is really great, really seductive. And this is the first time that Priscilla really acts of her own volition to take pills from Elvis. Right before this, we see her given essentially like a sedative pill that is way too strong for her, and she sleeps for 2 days.
It's just kind of funny,
which is incredible. I will say, when that happened, when Elvis was like, "You've been out for 2 days," I was like, "Somebody give me that fucking pill. I want to be out for 2 days. I need 2 days of sleep."
Yeah, holy cow.
And her first response was like, "Oh no, that's 2 less days of my trip." And I was like, "Girl, you got 2 days of sleep. You gotta be feeling good."
That'd be amazing, especially seeing throughout the rest of the movie where she's taking the opposite kind of pill and just like probably getting 2 hours of sleep every night. So,
And that is something that does come up early in the movie of Priscilla's parents basically saying like, you know, you can't keep doing this. You are far too tired. All these kinds of things. What did you think of the Vegas montage and really getting that introduction to like Priscilla fully accepting this world that Elvis has brought her into?
I liked it because after the montage, like we cut back to her going to school and you just know, like, what is the point? Like, you can just see it in her face of like, why am I here? This isn't what I want to be doing. I've experienced a lot of life, you know, and now I'm just here in this whatever 10th grade class, like English class. Like, I don't want to do this. So I liked that for that reason alone, just like kind of hitting home how quickly her life changed.
Yeah, really important in noting like the true elixir quality that Elvis has of like, wow, this guy is like magnetic. Like I just, like you said, he's holding court everywhere he goes. Like I just want to be around Elvis, and especially from Priscilla's standpoint of like being in love with him, I can only imagine how much of a magnet that is to like want to be there all the time. And, you know, her age does play a large part in that, of like feeling the need to be next to him all the time and that physical presence. I mentioned Priscilla's parents really quick, and I want to call out Dagmara Domenzeek, I think, or however you say her last name. She's from Succession. She plays Carolina. Shout out. I just want her in more things. I think she's beautiful and a wonderful actress, and I think she should be in kind of everything.
She was great. She was an awesome addition to this. Like, really the only face besides Jacob Elordi that I recognized in this whole movie. Mm-hmm. So that was cool to see her.
Yeah, it was cool to see her. Okay, next one on the list. The phone call, me or the career. So this is when Priscilla starts to get a little cognizant of what her life is becoming and wants to get a job kind of down, get a job at a store somewhere,
boutique, something like that. Yeah.
Nearby, and tells Elvis over the phone, because he's off filming a movie, that she wants to do this. And Elvis basically replies like, well, that's not going to happen. It's me or your career. And this gets brought up later as well, when Elvis is talking about one of his co-stars of a movie that he's rumored to have relations with. He mentions like she was a career first, man second type of a woman, and he doesn't want that.
Yeah.
Really feeding into that vicious power dominance that Elvis has over Priscilla, even over the phone, even thousands of miles away. And he tells her, I need you there when I call you. I thought this was a really startling, like, introduction to this power dynamic, that he kind of just like expects that. He expects to get his way.
Yeah. This is shortly after she's moved there. And we've already seen some montages of her, like, just exploring rooms in the house with nothing to do.
Yeah.
And so the fact that she expresses interest in it, and then even says, after he says no the first time, she's like, well, I thought it might be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, nope, I need you there when I call you. It's like, oh, okay, that's what this is going to be then. Like, I have to be here on call as like a rock, or as like a grounding place for him, mm-hmm, to be able to reach out to in the midst of all of everything else that he's doing on the outside.
Right. He's got it. Yeah. He's got to have his hands over like her life specifically. The fashion show kind of montage, if you want to call it again, is the next thing I have on the list here. This is where they go to basically to a boutique, and Priscilla tries on a bunch of clothes, and Elvis is very demanding of what she wears. And
super, this is opinionated.
Super opinionated. This is really the full kind of like encapsulation of, he just kind of views her as this thing that he can do whatever he wants with, and she'll listen, kind of like the, you know, kind of like we get that puppy dog illusion, and in the film, and that's kind of how this goes. He says that she doesn't look good in patterns and only solids, and that browns remind him of the war, and she can't wear brown, and blue is her color. To be honest, she looked just dazzling in every single outfit that she was wearing. And it's not awkward, but it's like kind of a hard scene to watch, where you're just like, oh, my woman, like, you got to get out of here. Like, you can't, don't look at his face. Like, you know, you got to turn away and just walk away, because you could have something great.
It's another instance where she's like, well, I like the dress. He's like, no, brown reminds me of the war. It's like, we're shutting it down. So interesting too, though, because the scene starts out with him at the car alone. It's like, I want to take you shopping. It's like, okay, great.
Yeah.
And then we cut to it, and it's him and all the boys.
Yep.
You know that are there. It's like, oh, he can't even do this on his own. Like, he needs their reinforcements, I guess. You know, mm-hmm, to like kind of exude this power over her, which is very telling.
And too, like, I can only imagine being in Priscilla's position of like, if I'm in love with Elvis, that's one thing. But then like, when I get told by Elvis that I don't look good in something, plus the 9 people around him agree with him, I'm deserted. Like, I have no standing ground to argue that or to get my way or anything. So you really start to see like the demolishment of their relationship, or I guess like her personal confidence in real time happen. The final exam. So cheating on the final exam, this is a big key point. She needs to graduate from high school, obviously very, very important to do especially in the 60s. And she moves to Graceland, enrolls in a Catholic school there, and does not do well in school, like, whatsoever. Is not able to answer anything on the test until the person she's sitting next to, she kind of, like, you know, reels her in a little bit with, yeah, with the Elvis charm, and says like, hey, do you like Elvis? Do you want to come to one of his parties? And she's like, hell yeah, I do. And shares her answers. And I liked this moment a lot because I was like, oh, cool. Like, now we're getting a much more impactful power dynamic, because Priscilla realizes maybe she can use Elvis's draw to her own advantage. Yeah. Not against Elvis per se, but just like, to get the things that she wants. And that is another, like, level of being sucked in this black hole of toxic fame, because she can just graduate high school, just like cheat on her test, no problem, just drop Elvis's name.
Yeah, she's got no power, you know, in the relationship with Elvis, but she's able to use his fame and his draw to kind of have some power over other people. She doesn't use it much throughout the movie. This is, like, probably the most egregious version of it that we see. But it's also done because if she doesn't graduate high school, she has to go back home, you know? So it's almost like desperate measures, like desperate times kind of thing. So, I thought it was a really cool scene.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, each time she's in the classroom leading up to this, it's very, like, the color is really sucked out. Like, it's very gray. It's very, kind of just, like, not fun to be around, which is a great representation of I'm sure how she felt. Next on the list, I have the sexy photo shoot. This is a great scene. Really two beautiful people doing a beautiful, like, just like interacting in a very attractive way. And then we get really the first explosion of anger from Elvis. I think Jacob Elordi does great in these, like, angry spurts.
Yeah.
Very Euphoria. I know that. Like, he had time to kind of hone that in and really get good at that. But we go from such a fun, intimate, loving activity. We're like, okay, I have a question for you about this scene. Now that I'm talking about it. Are they, like, they're in that room for, like, days, right?
Yeah.
They're just knocking boots for days.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like, it didn't seem like he had sex with her for a long time because he kept, like, brushing her off.
Right.
So it's like he wanted companionship, but maybe not, like, that kind of intimacy or something like that. I don't know, because he was getting it in his other relationships. Like, I felt like it was some sort of, like, no, I'm doing this with other people. I don't want to, like, you know, do this to her while I'm also having other relationships. That's kind of how I took it. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but he also did enjoy the companionship with her. So it's just like, you know, just a lot of cuddling, but no fucking or whatever, you know,
I guess a lot of show, no action. I kind of took that as a much more deliberate power move from Elvis, because if they have sex and if he allows her to feel that close to him and to maybe dictate when they have sex or how they have sex or whatever the case may be surrounding that part of their relationship, then that's already more power than Elvis wants her to have in the relationship, right? And he does string her along on that front, which is a very continuous thing that happens throughout the film of, like, there's going to be a right moment. There'll be a right time. Like, we'll figure it out. And really, it's just Elvis basically saying, like, I need to indoctrinate you first to make sure that I control you. And at least that's the way that it is played in the movie and the way that I understood it. Jacob Elordi is, like I said, is really good in this scene. Elvis freaks out about the pillow fight, which I thought was pretty funny, where it's like scary, but also funny, because Priscilla is like, you can't play without winning, which is true, which is very true of Elvis. And the fact that he chose that moment specifically to be the first moment we see that we're privy to where they're just having an intimate pillow fight is really genius stuff.
I think it's great. I think it goes back to the boys, you know, probably playing pool too, where they probably let him win, you know? And so he's used to being surrounded by people who don't challenge him. And, you know, this is her playfully challenging him. And he just like flip of a switch, you know, just like essentially hits her, you know? Yeah. And it's just like, oh, you can't just have fun here. Like, you have to win. That's kind of weird.
No fun kind of a guy. He does say like, I can't. He says something about like a woman is not supposed to fight like a man, or something to that effect, where she's exerting the powers that a man might have, and he really takes offense to that. Obviously, again, like here with his toxic masculinity, and you mentioned earlier, but this is the first of many times where we see him fly off the handle and immediately try to like retcon what he's done and sympathize with her and tell her that he is so sorry. And kind of like an abused dog, she just like keeps coming back because like the treat is there and it's the draw of Elvis, but she's going to get kicked again.
Yeah. He's an emotionally abusive person, you know, and she's young and susceptible to that kind of stuff, unfortunately. And I think that really gets highlighted in the movie.
Next kind of big moment is the card. I put this one on here. This is where Priscilla finds a card from one of his co-stars in a pocket of his jacket and basically brings it to him and is like, what's going on? And he's like, I don't want to talk about it, and leaves the room. And this is where, in my opinion, things really take off, where you're just like, oh, okay. Like, Priscilla's got to start to find her own way. We got to figure out what's going on here from her perspective, because this is not working. And Elvis continues to just bury things that he doesn't want Priscilla to be privy to, and really get her love drunk from time to time and just like keep her even longer.
Yeah. And it's another emotional abusive thing where it's like, he yells down like, hey, John, Priscilla's going home. Get her on the next flight out of here. And starts like throwing her luggage around and throwing clothes
in
there.
I'll pack for you.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, see, this is what will happen if you confront me on this. So just don't do that anymore. She's like, okay. You know, it's like, it's so sad to watch, but that's like just what the reality is.
Really, really, really sad. Okay, another montage. We get the LSD trip. I didn't see this coming. I didn't know we were going here. And I liked it. I thought it was good.
I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I liked it. It's like, oh, they said this will help us get deeper or whatever. I thought it was well done without being too... It had the opportunity to be really cartoonish, and I don't think it was. Like, I think it played it pretty straight, and I thought it was really well done.
A big year for montages of people tripping on drugs. There's a great montage in All of Us Strangers. I know that film's not out yet, but when it does come out, it will be one of a lot of people's favorites of the year, and there's a great drug montage in that. This kind of comes off the heels of Elvis entering, we kind of enter this new generation. We kind of get to like the hippie generation a little bit, like the pre-birth of hippie generation, and Elvis becoming a religious person, a spiritual person, reading from the Bible, reading from autobiographies and self-help books, and really trying to find where he stands with his influence. And I wanted to bring this up for one particular reason. There's a moment when he first gets into this stuff, he's reading a book in bed, and he mentions to Priscilla and basically says, like, I don't know, like, how can I best use my influence?
Yeah.
And she is like actively trying to have a relationship with him and trying to have sex with him and like coming on to him. And he's like, get off of me. I need to figure out how to be next to God, essentially, and like teach these people. I thought it was a really interesting insight into Elvis and like that level of fame, because we get lots of movies that are like about that level of fame, like that corruption that gets to the upper echelons of like, what do you do when you turn to spirituality because you think you're God? I think that's a great little subplot of this movie.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. You know, plays into their dynamic as a couple as well. Again, like kind of like rebuffing her as she's like trying to like make moves. He's like, now
I'm reading.
He's like, what does he say? Like, we have to control our desires before they control us.
Or our desires will control
us.
So
something along those lines. But yeah, it was a really interesting segment in this movie, that whole, you know, religious aspect, but then also how quickly it goes away when it's just like his dad's like, you're done with that. He's like, all right, cool, I guess I'm done. You know, it's like, well, we'll burn the books.
Let's fucking burn them.
Yeah, like that's it.
Which I think is funny too, because we only get like 10 seconds. We see him like tossing two books in the fire, and then it's like we're moving on. Elvis in small little bifocals. Are you yay or nay?
I mean, whatever's going to humanize this guy, I guess. Like, he may have been a weirdo, but hopefully he was a decent person in this time frame. But at the same time, like, we see him teaching this class, and he's like, oh, you got a great perfume, to this other woman who wears the same exact perfume that his wife does, you know? And she's like, all right, I'm done. I'm out of here. Yeah. It's just like, okay, so maybe you're always kind of a shithead, even if you're trying to be, like, this altruistic, like, religious person.
Yeah, look. Even uber famous people like Elvis, they got vision like the rest of us. They got to use glasses, you know? So got
to do it.
You got to do it. There's no escaping it. It's just what it means to be human. Three more things. Elvis reading, like I mentioned. Okay, we kind of talked about this. This is one thing I wanted to call out from this is Priscilla, when she is kind of coming on to him, she says that, I believe this is after they've had their kid, and she says, it's been a long time. And Elvis is like, I don't want to hurt you. And she's like, no, I'm fine. I'm a woman with needs who needs to be desired.
Yeah.
And I thought that in particular, that like screamed Sofia Coppola to me. That was just like, we did it. We really kind of boiled everything down into one sentence from Priscilla of like, this is where it's wrong. And this is what is wrong with toxic men. And that moment for me was really an interesting like play against their relationship. And I thought it worked really well.
I think you just highlighted how little he's had to care about what other people want in his life. He's just been surrounded by people who are just like either telling him what he wants or giving him what he wants. And he hasn't had to like return that favor to anybody throughout.
That's a good call out. Two more things. The family photo, taking a family photo. This is when their kid is basically their daughter is starting to grow up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the very end. The family photo I wanted to mention. I love that Sofia Coppola kind of broadly goes through a lot of time, and we see Elvis become the Elvis that we know from Baz Luhrmann's Elvis and from the very famous late stages of who he is. The sideburns and the leather tux and like the shows in Vegas with the white cape.
That was a cool little segment. That was awesome.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool and smart. Conversely, I did feel like the movie started to wander a little bit when we got there. And it just felt like are we building to something, or are we just like hanging out some more in this world, in this relationship? Which is probably the point from Sofia Coppola, like that's what happened to Priscilla. Like, I'm just hanging out. Like, I don't really have a choice, right? Like, we're here and this is what's happening. But also like from a viewer standpoint, I just felt like it got a little bit lost. So it might've lost me a tad.
That's totally understandable. I thought about that too. Just like, oh, we're getting a lot of Elvis stuff here, but in retrospect, that's probably what Priscilla was dealing with, was a lot of Elvis stuff, you know? Right. So it's just like, maybe there was like, you know, I was curious, like, all right, well, what is she up to? But it's like, I think we've seen what she's up to. She's just walking around her house, you know, with her kid. So that's it. So yeah, I thought that montage was pretty cool.
And then kind of the final scenes when she walks in on Elvis and basically says like, I'm done. I'm leaving this marriage. And this comes really pretty soon after Elvis like throws himself on her in between shows in Vegas and tries to forcibly have sex with her.
Yeah.
And she obviously doesn't want it, and he's really pretty down and out with the drugs and with the pills, and we see him waking up next to another woman and other things like that are very telling. She tells him, I'm leaving this marriage, and he responds, maybe another time in another place. And that was really smart and like script-wise and really impactful, because it again hammers home the like, did he ever really like love her on that same level that she loved him? Like, you don't have this massive, sprawling, famous relationship with somebody, and then you have a kid together and all of these things, and then she just comes in one day and is like, I'm gonna leave, and he's like, well, another time, another place, maybe it would have happened. She's like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, he was very dismissive, it felt like, of a lot of things. Yeah, I don't know. It was a very interesting scene. I liked her delivery, though. Like, I'm leaving. He's like, what does that mean? You know, it's just like, and then her phrasing of like, what did he? Oh, he said, did I lose you to another man?
Yep.
And she's like, no, you lost me to like wanting to live my own
life by myself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that was very, very powerful. That honestly probably was my true cinema moment, was that line delivery. Nice. I thought was really, really good. So I know, kind of jumping ahead, but that's probably my true cinema moment.
No, I love it. I totally agree. Again, like, you know, Sofia Coppola being like, this is it. This is what we've gotten to. This is why we're here. This is kind of what we're exploring. I'm going with the scene that I covered pretty much twice. I'm a woman with needs who needs to be desired. I thought that was really an interesting pivotal scene to the entire movie. And I also want to give, an honorable mention to something we didn't talk about. When Elvis gives her a gun as a present, and then she ends up getting different colored guns to go with different colored dresses.
Yeah.
Whoa. I was like, oh shit, we're deep. We're really deep.
Yeah. An honorable mention for me is when she is pregnant with their child and he calls her into the room and says, I think we need to take a break. And she is like, dealt with this so much. And she's like, cool, just let me know when to leave. And as he's walking away, he's like, wait, no, don't leave. Don't leave. It's like, oh, cool. You finally have cracked the code here. You can call him on his shit and he will back down. And I thought that was such a powerful scene.
It did kind of feel like a very brief Kendall Roy, like post, post big Succession moment where he's walking in the hallway, just like deeply disoriented and depressed. Because we do get like a nice close up tracking shot of her face doing a lot of emotional work, which again, like Hayley Spaney just kills it in this movie as Priscilla. Okay, cool. True cinema. I think we both enjoyed the movie. We had a good time. We got two A1 acts. We've got Sofia Coppola, which I think we've done before, but we're going to tackle again because this is a new Sofia Coppola movie. And the movie's about musicians, which I feel like we've done before too. But hey, if you're new here, then awesome. And if you've heard it before, I don't remember it personally. So
yeah, and maybe we'll pick something different than we did the first time. Who knows?
Right. Yeah, maybe new things. So Sofia Coppola, we've got Priscilla, The Virgin Suicide, Lost in Translation, Marie Antoinette, Somewhere, The Bling Ring, A Very Murray Christmas, The Beguiled, and On the Rocks. Can I ask you, how many Sofia Coppola movies have you seen?
I've seen 5 of her movies.
Wow. That's good.
I'm over halfway, 5 of her 9.
Okay, that's really good. I've seen Priscilla, and I've seen The Bling Ring, both covered here on the pod. That's all that I've seen.
Nice. So
I don't like that. I feel bad about that because everybody all the time is like, Sofia Coppola, like, so good. And I just like want to hop on the bandwagon. I'm just like, I didn't really like The Bling Ring, but I'm excited for Priscilla. So maybe I just need to see more things. So I'm going with Priscilla.
Nice.
I will say I need to do a rewatch of The Bling Ring. I've been seeing a lot of Bling Ring praise as of late somehow, like coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe I need to reevaluate because I did not like that movie the first time I saw it. And I feel like I got to give it another shot.
I think you should. I like the Bling Ring quite a bit, but that's not going to be my winner. My A1 act is actually going to be The Virgin Suicides, which is her directorial debut. Just like, I think, literally her most beautiful movie. And I felt like there was some connection between Priscilla and this one, as far as like lighting and things like that go. But yeah, Virgin Suicides gets my A1 act.
Nice. Are you going to buy any Priscilla merch from the A24 website?
I don't know that I'm going to, but I will say, my partner and I took a trip to Japan and we went to, I forget what store it was, but they had a bunch of Sofia Coppola shirts and like we bought one of each of them. Like it was one for every single movie that she had done basically.
Oh, wow.
And she bought one for everyone. It's like, we never see Sofia Coppola merch. So it's cool to see that Super Yaki was doing a Priscilla run.
That is really cool. That's exciting. I'm jealous. That's awesome. Okay, movies about musicians. Of course, this is Priscilla, but it is inherently tied to Elvis, who is a world-famous musician. So we've got Selena, Notorious, The Runaways, Love and Mercy, The Doors, Get On Up, La Bamba, Ray, Coal Miner's Daughter, Amadeus, Walk the Line, Straight Outta Compton, The Buddy Holly Story, Elvis, I'm Not There, and Respect. I believe also I can add to the list, I Want to Dance with Somebody came out this year or last year.
Yeah,
Whitney
Houston.
Whitney Houston,
yeah.
I don't look good. If this is your first time listening to the pod, just totally disregard. Like, don't judge me on this alone. I have seen 3 of the movies that are on this list, with Priscilla being the third. So, okay. Again, I've got a pretty slim pick for the same one.
Is it so? Elvis, Priscilla,
yep,
and Straight Outta Compton.
Yep, those are the 3 that I've seen.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
I rocked with Straight Outta Compton when it came out. I haven't seen it since it hit theaters.
It was great.
Like 5 or 6 years ago, but I thought it was really good.
Do the diss track when Ice Cube leaves the band and we get Sick. No Vaseline. Like, that's fucking so good. I love that.
All right, cool. I'm going Straight Outta Compton. You just fired me up again. I appreciate that.
I don't blame you. I'm going off script here, and I'm kind of breaking our rule. Like, we wanted to do it about famous people. This one is about a famous person.
You asked me to make that rule.
I know, just so I could break it.
You son of a bitch.
So this one is about a famous person, even though he denies it all the time. I'm picking 8 Mile, which is 100% about Eminem, even though he says it's not about him. Yeah, he says it's not like his story. Like, you know, it's kind of close. I'm like, dude, it's you. You know, like, come on. I love 8 Mile so much. Like, the battle raps, I can't get enough of them, dude.
Eminem too.
I'm not gonna spoil it for you, but like, the final battle rap that he has is against Anthony Mackie. It's against Falcon.
Oh shit!
It's against Captain America. Yeah, it is. It is so fucking good, man. Like, it is. I love that movie. So that's what I'm gonna go with, 8 Mile.
Okay. Wow. That's awesome. I love Eminem. And I've never seen 8 Mile. And when I tell people that, they pretty much human Chernobyl. They internally combust a little bit. And they're like, how have you done this? And I'm like, I don't know,
there's,
man.
There's a lot of stuff to watch, man.
Letterbox is the devil sometimes. My watch list is like thousands of movies long. What do you, what do you want me to do?
Maybe one of our Patreon things will be movies about musicians.
Oh, that could be good. I like that. Speaking of Patreon, we are coming up to 2024, and I will just put out there to listeners, obviously subscribe to the Patreon if you haven't. It's only $4 a month, and you get 4 episodes a month of us talking about non-A24 stuff, which is cool. But also, we don't have a plan for January yet. We have a plan for February and part of March, but we don't have a set plan for January yet. If there is a group of 4 or 5 films that you have interest in us covering, maybe a genre, a director, an actor, what have you, we're all ears.
Yeah. Please let us know.
Let us know. We'd love to know. A24 ranking for Priscilla. What do you got?
This is tough. B plus 24.
Okay.
I guess what I want to go with.
I respect that. Okay. Not a solid B, but you get B plus, but not an A, not in the A class.
Yeah. That's where I'm like, is it an A minus or is it a B plus? That's what I'm fighting between, but
okay.
I think I'm going to do a B plus with the room for it to grow.
Okay. I like that. I have it currently in my list, my big A24 list that I keep of 79 A24 movies. I have it ranked at number 28.
It's pretty good. Top third.
So yeah, top third. I feel like I feel like it's pretty good. I'd probably go with like a B, a solid B. Like, I feel like B minus is a little harsh. I enjoyed it more than that, but I don't think it's quite at the B plus level. Maybe on a rewatch, I get there. I think, like I said, there's a lot of things that I like about this movie that the more that I talk about it, the more I think about it, the more that I like it.
Yeah.
It just feels like I mentioned at the very beginning, like, it just feels like really pretty good and nothing more than that to me.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think it's a solid ranking for sure.
Yes. Okay, cool. We've got our rankings. We've got our True Cinema. We've got our A1 Acts. Next week on the pod, one of two things is going to happen. We don't know what it is yet. Priscilla was up in the air, like we said.
Yeah.
And luckily, both of us had showings in our city. Hey, A24, send us screeners. We'd love them. So we're either going to be covering Dream Scenario next week on the pod, which I'm greatly looking forward to.
Oh,
I don't know about
sure.
you.
I got a trailer for it before the movie. And
yeah,
I was just
me
like
too.
Reminded, like, okay, yeah, I'm very excited about this.
Nick Cage looks totally unhinged and committed, and it looks fantastic. So we've either got Dream Scenario with a guest, potentially. So that might happen. If we are not able to see Dream Scenario, if it is not playing in other cities besides New York and LA, which is yet to be determined, we are going to talk about the first episode of The Curse, which is premiering next Friday, the same day that our podcast comes out. So once again, look, I feel like we deserve a little credit. We're putting in the late hours here to try to get on top of this content and get it out so people can listen to it.
We're here for the people. We're here for the new releases, you know?
We are.
But seriously, A24, send us a screener. I'm tired of staying up.
I'm so tired. we're, you know, we're here for the pod. We're putting in the work. But either way, whatever happens, I'm very excited. The Curse looks really good. Dream Scenario looks really good. Like I mentioned, we have a Steven Spielberg collaborative draft coming up at the end of the month. So really exciting stuff coming this month on the pod. And then December, we have some really excellent stuff as well that we will not reveal yet, but I'm very excited about.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to all that. Also over on the Patreon, we're covering Fincher right now. Getting ready for
Daddy
killer.
Fincher. Oh, Daddy can Fincher. Can I say real quick, when Elvis said Daddy in this movie, I busted laughing. I'm sorry, but it was super funny to me. He said, I mean, that was like the most Elvis moment that Jacob Elordi did.
True. And then there's the later part in the movie when fucking Borat, who's ruined this, he's like, my wife. I was like, how many takes did they have where he's like, my wife, you know, like in his Elvis voice. Like, Borat Countless. Fucking ruined that. But I love it.
Name a more impactful cultural moment from a film than my wife. You can't, it can't
I don't
be
know
done.
That there is. I don't
it's
know
the top of the
is.
Tower.
It is. It's up there forever. what are your thoughts on Priscilla? Let us know. We're on Instagram and X. We're on Twitter.
Twitter forever. Forever.
Stupid X. It's so dumb. We're at 24 minutes of A24. Don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube. You can watch us talk about these movies and, you know, ring the bell, all that kind of shit. You can see when new episodes drop. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, we have a Patreon where we talk about movies that are not A24 movies. Right now we're going over Fincher, getting ready for The Killer. Mm-hmm. We're going over some other great filmmakers throughout the rest of this year.
Wow.
We'll be covering some Ridley Scott movies.
Can I just say how excited I am for House of Gucci? Excited, Ben. So excited.
Father, Son, and House of Gucci.
Father,
you know?
Son, House Let's of Gucci. It. I actually tell that to my kids every night before we go to bed.
Nice, it's awesome. And then we're also going to do some Michael Mann movies, getting ready for Ferrari. So the slate looks good.
We just
four
got
bucks
made.
A month, $4 a month. Also, you know what? Here's another thing. If you want to see us get punished and have to like mm-hmm. eat a hot sauce before we talk about these movies, mm-hmm. this is how you do it. Either we run over the 24-minute time frame, which we have become so fucking good at that we don't do that anymore.
We're pros, dude.
So now it's just like, how about this? If a patron signs up, we'll do the hot sauce. So if you have any interest in punishing us, you can do that for a measly $4 a month.
I'm not telling you to game the system, but look, if you just want to see us punished, just get in and get out. Just sub for 1 month and get out. I don't have a problem with that. If that's what it takes to get you to listen, then I'm here for it.
You make it happen. Plus, you get a bunch of great content. We start out with all the Mission Impossible movies. There's so
much
stuff
you can listen
to. Dude. Like, we covered a lot of great stuff. So
yeah, true.
If you want to support us there, that'd be fantastic. If not, just thanks for listening to the show. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, like, it means a lot. I love the interaction we have with people. I'm sorry to all the Raging Bull and Wolf of Wall Street fans. Those movies are good, but like, it's 11 movies from the fucking master. You know, we can't fit everything on there. So I'm sorry. I'm going to be apologizing for Spielberg too, I'm sure of it. But
watch the only indie movie that makes Spielberg is Crystal Skull because of you.
I mean, that's the
only
one I can
nominate.
You're just
going to veto everything else?
Yeah. Give me fucking Shia LaBeouf swinging on these vines, baby. None of your movies have that. Thanks for supporting us. Appreciate you guys being here and hanging out with us. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.